Call the Senate Human Services Committee to order, please. Welcome on this beautiful sunny day. How come you're not out? We should go outside for this hearing, right? Okay, we're going to change the order a little bit on the agenda, and we will have the informational part of the meeting first, and we will invite pharmaceutical industry representatives to come up to the table. Jim Gardner, is Ann here? Oh, there she is. And Don Stetcher. Anthony and Don Stetcher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm Oregon Counsel for Pharma, and the major part of this presentation is going to be delivered by my two colleagues, Don Stetcher with Novartis, who's our Oregon Task Force Chair, and Tweed with Bristol-Myers Squibb, who's our Oregon Task Force Vice Chair. And I simply want to highlight for the committee what I think is a pretty remarkable story of success, a story that's still unfolding and still in progress. And it's the story of the incredible participation by Oregonians in the free access programs offered by the pharmaceutical industry, the patient assistance programs. What I'm going to be talking about are not the new and very exciting discount programs that Ann is going to be describing for you, but free drug programs. Drug programs that have really grown in response to the fiscal crisis that this state has faced over the last few years, when it was forced to dramatically curtail participation in OHP standard, the Oregon Health Plan standard population, when it was forced to dramatically reduce the medically needy programs. When we first started talking to this body about the patient assistance programs, the free drug programs, the number of Oregonians participating in them was certainly significant, in the area of 30,000 Oregonians participating on an annual basis. And that's the number of participants, not the number of drugs per participant, because most of those people were multiple prescription users and were enjoying multiple prescriptions on a free basis. Over the last 2 to 3 years, as the budget shortfall has forced curtailment of the Oregon Health Plan program and forced curtailment of the medically needy program, we have seen absolutely dramatic growth in the free drug program. The last number for which we have a hard audited statistic is 2002, and in that year there was roughly 65,000 Oregonians participating, with an average of 2.2 prescriptions per Oregonian. That's from a couple of years before, that's 100% growth. Our straight line extrapolation, arithmetic extrapolation, and the best evidence we've had, given the rate of growth that we know exists, is approximately 100,000 or more Oregonians now participating in the program, in the free drug program. Again, using an average of 2.2 prescriptions. Now let's, just for sake of analysis and comparison, contrast that with where we're at with Oregon Health Plan standard. We're going to see that program, because of budgetary constraints, shrink at the end of this biennium to roughly 24,000 enrollees. What that means is that the free drug programs that the industry is offering are roughly four times the size of the Oregon Health Plan standard population. Why did that success occur? In large part because of the need, because people needed these products, and they needed them rather desperately. Partly because of the incredible partnership in terms of outreach that we have experienced with nonprofits all over the state, with church groups, advocacy groups, with our own website, our own, which Don Stetcher will talk to you about, our Oregon-specific website, and in no small measure because of the active involvement of legislators from both sides of the aisle who have held unbelievably well-attended and successful town hall meetings to make people aware about of these programs. So the citizens' hats ought to be off to you for your efforts and involvement in making people aware of these programs. As dramatically as they have grown, as they have grown over the last few years, we see the need continuing and indeed intensifying. Our objective is to continue that path of growth, perhaps accelerate it if we're lucky. There's a piece of legislation that will be coming either to your committee, Mr. Chair, or to Senator Moniz Anderson's committee, brought to you by Senator Bates, which will engage the state in a dramatic new way in networking together all of the volunteer resources necessary to help doctors get their patients enrolled in these programs. A very exciting bill that we're proud to be assisting on. It's an exciting program, and most importantly, it's a real program. It's not pie in the sky. It's not a theory. It's not a, as the term was used with regard to another alternative, it's not a hypothesis. This is a proven, certain program that has actually worked. And it's serving right now 100,000 Oregonians with free drugs, a number we hope to dramatically increase. With that, let me pause for questions, and if there are none, turn it over to Mr. Shea.
Questions? Do you have anything to add?
I do.
Oh. Okay. We've got a lot of testimony. So
I'll walk you through those. Chair Morissette.
I'm sorry. Jim, Mr. Gardner, I looked through the first two pages of the handout. There were 36 visits around the state, and I was at the one in Lane County that you came to when we had the sign-ups, and they were very well attended, and you're right, there was a lot of participation by a lot of legislators around the state, and 36 different visits of your organization to get people signed up. So I understand what you're talking about, and I think that's great.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Don.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Don Stetcher. I'm an Associate Director of Government Affairs for Novartis Pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. As Jim mentioned, I also serve as Chair of the Pharma Task Force here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. In April 2003, we, Pharma, worked with legislators and patient advocates to develop launch an Oregon-specific website, www.healthyoregon.org, to help low-income Oregonians get the prescription medicines they need. It serves as a portal for Oregonians of all ages who do not have prescription insurance coverage. Please refer to the homepage of the www.healthyoregon.org handout. Usage of this website in combination with an array of outreach and educational efforts shows that there are more than 100,000 Oregonians, as Jim mentioned, now accessing free prescription assistance. We've seen this number increase exponentially from 2001, when 35,000 Oregonians obtained needed medications, to 2002, the number increased to 65,000, 2003, there were 89,000, and currently, as Jim mentioned, there are over 100,000 who have been helped by this program. These enrollment increases are the result of, in fact, 45 patient access fairs held all over the state in 2003 and 4, in bipartisan partnership with legislators, senior organizations, the governor's advocacy office, the Patient Advocates for Medicine Coalition, and pharmaceutical companies. Please refer to the homepage of www.healthyoregon.org, again, the Who We Are page. Through our internal reporting mechanisms, we know that each person helped receives an average of 2.2 prescriptions each, which amounts to almost $40 million of assistance provided to our state's most vulnerable residents. Nationally, prescription assistance by pharmaceutical companies, compassionate care programs, totaled more than $6.3 billion. While this has been an important and successful first step, we recognize the need here. The need here continues to grow, and as a representative of one of the world's largest pharmaceutical manufacturers, I can tell you we are dedicating more resources to improve affordability of and access to medications. With a target date of May 1st, 2005, we will roll out a new and improved effort that we're calling RX Help for Oregon. We're modeling this after a successful effort in the state of Washington with its site, www.rxhelpforwa.org. Please refer to the homepage for that website. In its first 2 months, rxhelpforwa.org has already had more than 123,000 requests with matches for more than 65,000 patients. That's a 53% success rate. At this current rate, savings for the state of Washington's Medicaid budget could total more than $24 million annually, but that's only with 2 months' worth of enrollment. So we know that this figure is expected to increase. The new Oregon website will also provide a call center component through a 1-800 number. As you know, very often senior citizens and some that do not have access to computers are much more likely to call an 800 number. Both the website and the call center will offer bilingual help and be easy to navigate so that Oregonians can qualify for programs and move through the brief application process. Once the applicant receives their doctor's approval, the application can be completed. Again, this effort will only be successful with a broad-based public education and outreach effort. These efforts will also be timed with the Medicare prescription drug benefit enrollment education and outreach that we're undertaking now. We're continuing our aggressive efforts to get these important resources into the hands of needy Oregonians. And we'll be inviting legislators, patient advocates, community organizations, and some non-traditional partners to work with us in this huge effort. We're open to your suggestions on how to best match needy patients and our programs. One thing I want to leave you with is that we're doing our very best to help patients get the drugs and the medicines that they need. And with that, I'll entertain questions. And if not, I would like to introduce Ann Tweet, who will share about a new program. It's called Together RX Access.
Thank you. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Ann Tweet with Bristol-Myers Squibb. And I just wanted to highlight one additional program, a different type of program, in addition to the programs that Mr. Garden talked about that provide free drugs for Oregonians. We have launched a new program called Together RX Access. You may be familiar with Together RX. It was a program that, as the chair noted, we took around the state 2 years ago to enroll folks over 65 so that they could actually obtain a retail discount on their prescription drugs. Together RX Access differs from Together RX in that this program is for the benefit of folks who are younger than 65. So it is still a joint effort of major manufacturers, and on the second page of your brochure you can see that it includes the products manufactured by Abbott, AstraZeneca, Bristol-Myers Squibb, GlaxoSmithKline, Janssen, Novartis, Ortho McNeil, Pfizer, Sanofi Aventis, Takeda, and TAP. And the blue pages in the back of this brochure actually identify the products that, as of the date of printing of this brochure, are actually available through this program. Together RX Access will provide folks who are eligible with a 25 to 40% discount off the retail price of their medications. And we're looking at 275 brand name products right now, as well as prescription products such as diabetic testing strips and glucose monitors. In addition, a wide range of generic products as well. We are, there's no charge to apply for this program. The application is free. The application is right in the middle of the book. You can see that it's a relatively short application, and the income certification is a self-certification. No additional documentation is required for somebody who wants to apply for the program. So who is eligible? As I said, folks who are under 65 and who don't have any prescription drug coverage already, and who have incomes at or below $30,000. So an individual who makes less than $30,000 a year would be eligible for this. A family of two could make up to $40,000 a year and be eligible. A single mom of two children who didn't have prescription drug coverage could make as much as $50,000 a year. It would be a household of three, and they would be eligible for the 25 to 40% discount. As I said, there is no application fee. You can do it online, you can do it over the phone, you can do it through the mail, and it takes about 3 weeks to receive your card, which again you present at the pharmacy for a discount right at the time you're purchasing the products. And just like the Together Rx program for seniors that we talked about a couple years ago, if in fact someone were to apply for this program and actually be eligible for the company's free drug programs, their income levels are such that they would be eligible for free drugs, not just the discounted program, they will be told that at the time of application. They will be told that they actually apply, qualify for the free drug programs and be provided with application information for the particular programs for which they are eligible.
Ms. Tweet, or Mr. Chair, regarding a person who sends this form in and they are on a medication that is covered, you send them the card, and then they may have a prescription, but maybe some of them won't be covered and some will.
Yeah, it's, Mr. Chair, Senator Moss Anderson, it is an effort, for, joint effort for the companies listed on the inside page, page two. Some manufacturers are not represented in this program. Some manufacturers have additional programs in addition to this. This is by far has the widest breadth of coverage for the brand name pharmaceuticals that are manufactured today.
And then a follow-up?
Yes.
And then, so there's really nothing else. You don't give your physician's name. You don't give anything. The pharmacy then, because they've gotten the prescription, they send it in. I mean,
Mr.
or
Chair,
they bill or whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Moniz Anderson, once you receive your Together Rx Access card, it's purely a transactional issue at the retail level. It's not, products don't go to the physician like you may be familiar with on some of the free drug programs. It's all at the retail level, much like your Safeway card, your Albertsons card, all at the retail level.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The gavel is ready to go down, but. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 329. Would you explain the bill, please?
Thank you, Senator. Just briefly, this basically expands program, the Oregon Prescription Drug Program that was established under Senate Bill 875 last session. It expands eligibility by allowing programs people with programs in the private sector, trust carrying out multiple employer welfare arrangements, and any age person. There's an explanation of the program under background, that it is a bulk buying program open to residents of Oregon age 54 years of at least 54 years old, and have to be at least under 185% of the total poverty level. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Greenlick, would you please come up and testify?
Thank you very much, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. I appreciate you hearing your bill today, and I'm happy to be here to help. I do want to talk a little bit about history, because I think history is important here, and thinking about where we were and possibly then where we can be going, because I think this is a big step. I think it's an important bill, and I'm really happy to be here to talk about it. In the 71st Legislative Assembly, the 2001 session, there were six bills in the session to talk about creating this bulk purchasing pool. The sum total of the six bills was one 15-minute hearing on one of the six, and that was the whole action in this area. In the 72nd Legislative Assembly, the stars aligned a little differently, and we had a chance to propose, and I think this is what Mr. Gardner was talking about before, what some of us referred to as the hypothesis, that if you could try the market way of gathering enough people and enough market power into a single agency on behalf of the people of the state of Oregon, that we could create enough market share power to reduce the prices of drugs for our citizens. And basically what we did with the introduction of Senate Bill 875 was create the environment where we could bring a group of people together from across the spectrum to move the ball a little bit up the court, up the field. I was a rookie last year, and I found it interesting. One of the things I learned from some of my mentors, like Senator Cruz, for example, who was very helpful in some of these discussions, is that sometimes the perfect is the enemy of the good, and that what this business is about is about trying to get all the people in the room and trying to find out where the common movement was. And the history of Senate Bill 875 in the last session was exactly that kind of a matter. Folks like Senator Amanda Anderson and you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Cruz and Senator Bates, not all senators at the time, and Senator John Minnis, and then a wide range of interested parties in the citizenry that went all the way from pharma and the State Pharmacists Association, the SEIU, Oregonians for Health Security, the AARP, Common Cause. A large number of people got together and worked very hard for several months to create the kind of compromise that would allow us to go forward to test where we are today. And you'll hear where we are today a bit in this discussion. And the state agencies have made great strides in moving us. One of the things we promised as a part of the original formulation of Senate Bill 875 was that we would be back in the next session with a plan to expand it, with some essence of how feasible it is. Could we really get it off the ground? Could we really get started? And then what would be the next steps? And I think the bill you have for consideration is a valid attempt to outline some of the next steps. Senate Bill 875 limited the individual coverage to folks under 185% of the poverty line and 55 years of age and older. This bill would change that that age limit, but not in its current form change the poverty limit. We talked about basically enrolling government groups in the group piece of the plan, including state and local government groups and school boards and OHSU. We're talking in this bill about expanding that into private groups, because private groups increasing the private group penetration would both help more Oregonians get lower priced drugs, and it would also increase the penetration that we have and increase the ability to move market share. I suspect the road to from where we are now to passage of this bill through the Senate, through the House, and to the governor's signature is going to take some hard work. It's going to take a lot of goodwill, It's going to take the ability to work together on a bipartisan way and a bicameral way, and to include all the interested parties, making sure they have a chance to test where they think they need to go with where their other interested parties think they need to go. I think it's a noble effort. I think it's worth time and energy. I really do commend all the partners who worked to get us to the point we are now, and I urge you to move this bill, and I urge my friends who helped make it work last time to sit down together and make sure we can create a program that's worthy of the state and worthy of their professions and their interest groups. I'll be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thank you. Yes. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenleck, good to see you. We don't get to spend much time together anymore.
I miss it.
I know, I do too. I guess just, Representative, some concerns here. I mean, and you're right, we spent a great deal of time, a great deal of energy, and I think came up with a very good product last session that went into effect, what, 3 days ago? Okay, so it's got no history right now. And then you're talking about adding public to this when we're also at this time looking at 340B type programs for that very component. And I guess I'm just wondering if this isn't premature to be, I mean, we had a work group product, very collaborative, and then we got a unilateral thing going here that's jumping on top of that. And I told Senator Morissette, I thought that maybe the best thing we could do is reform the work group to look at all the options that are out there and see what the next step was from that perspective. Do you think maybe that would be before just moving the bill, that might be a good step in the process?
Senator Morissette, Senator Cruz, if the legislature met in even number years, I would say 2006 might be a better legislative session to deal with this bill. But I think 2007 is really too long. I don't think we can wait 2 years. If in your wisdom you deem a work group a logical way, I'd be very happy to participate in that work group, lead it, or be involved in any way that I can. And I do believe, for example, Mr. Gardner and I learned to have a lot of confidence in each other last year, and that was 2 years ago, and that was very helpful. I think there are some strong positions, but I think if that's the direction you go, I believe we can create a product that would work.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I would prefer if we're going to move in a direction, we do so in a collaborative way and not an adversarial, and that, which is the reason I made the suggestion.
Good. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Bruce Goldberg and Aaron Kelly Seal, would you please come up?
Now she's really showing now. A few weeks ago, she wasn't that much.
Last time you weren't.
That's why I like these tables. Chair Morissette, members of the committee, I'm Erin Kelly-Seal. I'm the Governor's Health and Human Services Policy Advisor. And I'm just here today to express the Governor's continued support for the Oregon Prescription Drug Program and for any effort to expand it. Governor believes that the rising cost of prescription drugs is one of the most critical issues facing healthcare issues facing Oregon today. Controlling costs, making drugs more affordable have been a top priority for him since he took office a couple of years ago. Last session, I think we all together, we've heard already, took an important step by creating the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, and you know that it launched this week with more than 1,200 people already enrolled last December following an outreach effort by the AA. 11,000 Oregonians submitted letters of interest about the program, and with the program in its current form, we're optimistic that just on the individual side, we can enroll more than 46,000 Oregonians, saving them more than $8 million, which we think is really significant. We also think, though, that Oregon can and should do more, and that's why we're here in support of expansion. Last week, our office received a letter, actually, Senator Cruz, from a gentleman in Roseburg, Oregon, who asked us this question. I think he's asking the legislature the same question. If this discount plan is good enough for those over 55, then why is the plan not good enough for all citizens? I think that's what Senate Bill 329 and corresponding legislation also are trying to do, just with the expansion of the program. We've also received significant interest from the private sector in the program. I think it's no secret that the rising cost of health care is impacting the employer's ability to provide coverage for their employees and individuals' ability to purchase care when it's offered. One of the things we hear not just about from the business community is not just about the savings, the potential savings the program has to offer, but also a significant attraction for them is the transparency that the program offers in terms of how it's structured and administered. So we're very encouraged by their response and support as well for expanding the program. So in short, on behalf of the governor, I'm just here to say thank you for already the efforts that have been made and the opportunity to support the future efforts and its continued success and our opportunity, I think, that we have to give Oregonians access to the medicines they need at a price they can afford. I'm happy to take any questions or turn it over to Bruce.
That's the easiest part, the questions. Now, questions. Okay, thank you very much, and I am very happy to hear from you and the governor and your continued support, and I know that the governor made some statements at news conferences during the interim concerning purchase of drugs and waivers and so on and so forth, and so I know of his interest, and I'm glad to hear it today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Goldberg, Dr. Goldberg.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office of for Oregon Health Policy and Research. You'll no doubt hear today from a variety of people about the need for affordable prescription drugs in this state. Indeed, I think what you'll hear is really just the tip of the iceberg. Today in Oregon, I think, as you know, 17% of our population is without health insurance. That's 609,000 individuals who have no health insurance coverage. And even amongst those who do have health insurance coverage, many have high deductibles, high prescription drug copays, high coinsurance, such that affording medicines is very difficult. Actually, for adults 18 to 64, 22% are uninsured in this state. That means almost one in every four Oregonians between 18 and 64 has no health insurance coverage. We've made really remarkable medical advances over the last 20 and 30 years. We have wonderful new medications, yet many of our citizens cannot afford them. It's really in these circumstances that the legislature came together last session and unanimously voted to establish the Prescription Drug Purchasing Pool Program, which you heard about on Tuesday from Missy Dolan. As you heard, the program is now up and running. We began on March 1. 1,200 people have already signed up, and many more are calling every day. We've actually been deluged with telephone calls. The program offers really substantive savings to individuals, 15 to 60% off their prescription drugs. For groups, the program will provide a totally transparent and a cost-effective means of purchasing drugs. I think there's a couple things you need to know. One, the program is easy to use. Unlike other discount programs, individuals in this program can get discounts on any medicine that a doctor prescribes. The doctor doesn't have to do any paperwork. It's simple. It's easy to use. People get a card, and they can go to participating pharmacies. The community has really come together in a remarkable way to help support this program and to make it a success. AARP, Oregonians for Health Security, the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, many, many others, I hesitate mentioning names because I know I'll leave someone out, have helped come together to disseminate information, answer phone calls, and to really help make this program a success. We started with limited resources. AARP has printed brochures. They've helped with applications. They've helped answer the phones. Their help has been invaluable, and actually we owe them all our gratitude. Pharmacies in the state have come forward as well. We have, at this point in time, two-thirds of pharmacies in the state are participating in this program, and we've only been signing them up for the last month. We've been on a very aggressive timeline. And to be honest, the other big issue around pharmacies is that the discount that people in this program get is coming from the pharmacies. So we really owe the pharmacies our thanks as well. We have a contract with a benefits administrator, Walgreens Health Initiatives. They've been fantastic. They've come forward with really a great program. They've been an excellent partner. They provide us with really the kind of competitive pricing that many other states that have these kinds of programs are envious of what we've been able to negotiate with them. We're now poised to have the pharmaceutical manufacturers come forward and offer additional discounts as well. They actually have the ability to provide individuals even greater discounts. It would make sense. I actually spoke with Mr. Gardner this morning about this. If they did that and we could provide every citizen in this state in need a single comprehensive pharmaceutical discount program that offers discounts to every medicine. This would simplify things for the prescribers in the state, for the doctors and nurses who prescribe drugs. It would simplify things for the pharmacies. They would be able to have one simple administrative structure by which we can offer people a discount. And it would simplify things for citizens. They could confidently know that when they walked into a drugstore with a card that they would get a discount and that they wouldn't need to go to three different drugstores or have their doctors fill out a myriad of paperwork. And actually, you have that vehicle in front of you today. By expanding the program, you know, we can offer all those in need in this state substantive discounts. When we all sat down and established this program, life was very different. We actually, there was no Medicare prescription drug bill. And at that point, we were really looking at those over 65 who were desperately in need of prescription drug relief, and the legislature came through and did the right thing, and we established this program. It was age above 55, because at that point we knew that the vast majority of people in need of prescription drug relief were those over 65. Things are different today. In a few months, in January 2006, citizens over 65 will have a Medicare drug bill, and they will get access to prescription drugs through the Medicare program. They won't need to utilize this program. So it would make sense to take away the age limit in this program and offer this as a discount to everybody who needs it. Rising health care costs are also a big concern to our state's businesses, that you know that, and this program can provide an additional cost-effective option for businesses as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. What kind of application process does the patient have to have? I mean, when I take a look at what Retreat gave, it's just a simple form. And how do they get enrolled?
Senator Morissette, Senator Nona Sanderson, the application is a very simple application form. It is a one-page form. I can get you a copy. I believe it has the person's name, address. They need to attest to the fact that they are under the income level that is a requirement for the program. They need to attest to the fact that they've been uninsured for 6 months, which is another requirement of the program, and they need to sign.
Follow up?
Yes.
And then how do you check the income level? I mean, do you...
Chair Morissette and Senator Mona Sanderson, we have established administrative rules for the program by which legislators, the industry, and everybody came together, and we do not verify the information on the application one by one. We actually will be auditing as the program goes forward to assure that those who enter the program have truthfully attested to the information that's on the application form.
Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have the resources to do that. We put this program up with not enough money for even Missy Doe, the salary of the staff person that we've hired.
Thank you. Rick Bennett?
Chairman Morissette, the members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rick Bennett, representing AARP Oregon. I've provided a letter from our state director, Jerry Cohen, as well as an insert, which I'll get to in just a moment. First of all, I would like to commend both the Dr. Goldberg and Missy Dolan and others who have worked in developing and implementing this program in a really very short period of time. I think they've just done an outstanding job. The process that they used was inclusive, allowing all of us who are interested in the program to participate, to provide input as far as the development of the rules that would govern the program. And again, I just want to give my thanks and appreciation for the work they've done on this program up to date. As mentioned, AARP has been very supportive of the development of this program. We've tried to provide whatever support we possibly could to get it up and running and make it a successful program, including inserts and mailings to members and non-members in the state, and also helping with the enrollment. Just today, another insert is in many of the papers in the state. We have distribution, I think, of about 700,000 or more in newspapers today around the state. And inside is a description of the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. I got a phone call from our office just moments before the committee meeting started, and we've already received several hundred phone calls from individuals wanting more information and wanting to know how they can enroll in this program. So the interest is certainly out there, and we want to help build on that by seeing this program expanded. I will not read Mr. Cohen's letter to you, but let me just indicate that clearly we believe that the age requirement should be eliminated. I think the reasons for doing so have already been well stated. We also believe that the income requirement should be eliminated or certainly increased. As noted earlier today, the new Together Rx Access program is available to people with an individual with income up to $30,000. I think that probably puts it in the ballpark of about 300% of federal poverty level. And certainly, at a minimum, we think the income level should be increased to that to 300% for this program as well. And of course, the same supports the elimination of the age requirement on this program. We also support the inclusion of business interests. We think that's a good idea. We know that across the state, many individuals are still having difficulty gaining access and affording prescription drugs. Oftentimes, doing without other basic needs, or either not filling their prescriptions or skipping dosage and so forth. I think the pharmaceutical companies should be commended for their efforts, their charitable assistance programs, and the new program they're coming forward with. But the reality is, it's just a drop in the bucket. There are still many, many people out there that need assistance, and I think that's the primary reason for expanding this program, moving it forward, and helping more of our fellow citizens. I would also like to respond to Senator Cruz's question related to why now, why can't we wait? And I agree with Representative Greenlick. It has just started. The program just, it's days in place here. But to wait until sometime in 2007 to talk about expansion is just waiting too long. People need assistance now. We can't wait. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Tim Nesbitt, would you please come up?
Senator and members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt. I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 329. If I can repeat a couple of the points I made 2 years ago in support of the predecessor bill, Senate Bill 875, I think those points are even more compelling now. Obviously, healthcare costs continue to rise out of control, out of all proportion. Those costs are raising the cost of business in the private sector and the cost of providing services, as you well know, in the public sector. And those costs are squeezing our members' paychecks and very often are consuming every extra dollar that would otherwise go to a pay raise or an increase in pensions or other benefits. Also, prescription drug costs continue to be a major driver of these overall healthcare costs. And the prices set for these products are, and I'll talk more about this as I go through my testimony, are clearly unfair and excessive. Another point that I think is important to consider, we can negotiate more fair and affordable prices for prescription drugs through bulk purchasing. The modest Oregon prescription drug purchasing program has already proven this, but most importantly of all now, we need your help in order to expand this effort. If I can share with you some facts from our experience with employment-based health plans in this state, and in particular those in which our 180,000 members in this state participate, outpatient prescription drug costs now represent about between $120 and $160 per month of the average premium paid by employer or workers combined for the average worker. In addition, there are the out-of-pocket costs. Now, if you think of that the amount of money, if we could get prescription drug prices down to the level that larger states pay for their Medicaid programs, we could easily reduce the costs in our plans by at least 20%. That's not as great as a percentage you hear when we're working from an uninsured population as the population is now in the startup program, because some of our programs already have negotiated some better prices. But the point is that I don't think we need further studies to tell us that in this industry, who you are, how large a group you represent, really dictates the kind of prices you get for the very same products. Studies show that prescription drugs purchased by an uninsured person cost more than twice as much as the same medication purchased by the VA system, by the feds through the VA system. Big states pay less than small states, and big insurance groups pay less than small insurance groups. Every study shows that. This is definitely a market where more is better and bigger is best when you're trying to get a fair price. Another example from my testimony in the last session. Remember what happened when we needed large quantities of Cipro to combat the anthrax threat after 9/11. Bayer was charging $4.67 per tablet, average wholesale price, but the feds got them down to 75 to 95 cents a piece by promising to buy a large volume of that particular drug. And Bayer still made money on the deal because it's estimated that it spent no more than 20 cents per pill to make that product. So think of the magnitude of savings there when a very large effort was made, the largest of its kind, actually, for any one prescription drug, but it really shows the amount of savings that can be achieved through bulk purchasing. I would offer this observation about Senate Bill 329. What it represents is an invitation to all parties of interest to come to a centralized marketplace to negotiate the prices of prescription drugs, which are so important and critical now in our health plans. What's happening now under Senate Bill 875 is that you have only a small fraction of the population come to that marketplace, and you then have a program which allows the state, in effect, to negotiate price for that small population. But you're specifically excluding about 2 million Oregonians who get their health insurance coverage from their jobs, whose premiums are paid by the employers or by themselves, and who experience significant out-of-pocket costs. We're not getting the price discounts that we know can be achieved, the fair prices that we know can be achieved, if they all come together to a common marketplace and with your assistance through a state program, negotiate as one, with the drug companies. You know, the free drug programs are nice. They should be encouraged. But they shouldn't be used as a decoy in this debate about how to help Oregon's working families and employers who are struggling to cope with rising health care costs. This bill, again, just invites all parties to negotiate. The drug companies would do just that, negotiate. They wouldn't be mandated to provide discounts. But we know that we're going to get to a much fairer pricing system if we can do exactly what this program was set up to do and invite those 2 million Oregonians to come to the table with your program and negotiate fair prices. That's all this bill does. We urge you to act on it in this session.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Lynn Lundquist, would you come up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I am here not to talk about the details of the bill. I don't have that expertise. I'm here in response to our association's desire to make sure that our companies can stay competitively locally, nationally, and internationally. Healthcare costs and obviously pharmaceuticals are a larger portion of that. And it simply boils down to the fact that if we are to be able to continue to offer insurance to our employees, that we are coming to the point to where we may or may not do that. And particularly for some of the smaller companies, that's true. So it is not about, from the standpoint of trying to somehow squeeze profits out of the pharmaceutical company. It's about what Tim just talked about, a matter of coming to the table and seeing what can be negotiated for the benefit of all Oregonians, including the business and including the business community. Senator Cruz talked earlier about the need to have a collaborative approach. And we are here not in any way to on any kind of a mandate, but I couldn't agree more, Senator Cruz, that Jim Gardner and his colleagues ought to be certainly the players in here, along with everyone else that's involved, to come to a collaborative approach. We are not here to say there is this way and that's the only way to do it. And we simply, as the business community, we think this is such a significant part of our profit structure today that if we're not careful, that we can harm that to the degree that it's not good for the state as well as for our own businesses. It simply boils down to this from the business community. We know that healthy employees are productive employees. And that's how we create profits in the business sector, is by having productivity. And so this is one aspect of that. This isn't certainly the biggest aspect, but it is one aspect of keeping our companies profitable, which in the end will be good for the state as well. We implore you to take a good, solid look at this in a collaborative way, and hopefully that there will be an outcome that is beneficial to all. You have my testimony. I didn't want to read that.
Thank you.
So thank you for your time.
Okay. Joe Mahoney, Shannon Pastoris, and Joyce Willman, would you all please come up?
Okay. Chair Morissette and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Pastorius, and I live in Beaverton. I have multiple sclerosis and asthma. These diseases require several prescription drugs to slow the progression of my MS, control pain, spasms, fatigue, cognitive functions, and to allow me to breathe. All of my medications were covered under the Medically Needy Program. When the state cut the Medically Needy Program, I was forced to find other sources to pay for the medications that enable me to live a decent quality of life. These sources came from the pharmaceutical patient assistance programs and occasionally funding from social agencies. The most important medication, Copaxone, I won assistance through a special lottery, lowering the price I had to pay for a 3-month supply from $75 to $5. Even with the assistance of the pharmaceutical patient assistance programs, I am buried under piles and piles of paper needing to be filled out, copied, processed, and mailed. Then I need to wait for the medications to arrive, which may or may not be before I run out of my current supply. The process never ends. There are prescription medications that are only available as a generic that do not have patient assistance programs. These are drugs that people such as myself must often go without because these more affordable medications are still too expensive. If I am ill or injured and need antibiotics, cough syrup, or any number of other costly medications, I cannot afford to buy them. If I had strep throat and needed antibiotics today, there is no time to apply for a patient assistance program and then wait and wait for help. What am I supposed to do in such a situation? I'm disabled and receive Social Security disability, but I am too young to qualify for the prescription drug purchasing program created during the last session. While this program would not be the entire solution for me, it would help, and I need all the help I can get. Expanding the prescription pool will increase the size and negotiating power of the program. It will help all participants save money on prescriptions. Prescription drug prices have increased at double-digit rates for the last 8 years and are projected to continue double-digit inflation for the next 8 years. Oregonians spent over $1.5 billion on prescriptions in 2003. The skyrocketing costs are particularly hard on the 780,000 Oregonians like me without prescription drug coverage. Please support SB 329 so that I can jump into the prescription pool. Thank you. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Hannah. Talk about the lottery a little bit.
There is a lottery that was put together for people that have serious illnesses such as multiple sclerosis, cancer, lupus, etc. And they put the names in. They send out applications for this lottery to people who would be eligible. We filled out our applications. We sent them in. The first lottery, I did not win. Second one, yay, I won drugs.
And how long does that last?
I don't know. Until they say no more. That's the same with the patient assistance programs, until they say no more.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm a winner.
Okay, who wants to...
I guess I win this lottery.
Yeah.
My name is Joy Wilman. It's J-O-Y-E. There's no C in there. And I'm a home care worker. I'm also a member of SEIU, but I've been asked to come speak today from Oregonians for Health Security. And I didn't get a chance to copy off my little notes here, so sorry about that. And I am aware of HIPAA laws. My brother's given me permission to use part of his story.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, Danny, is only 46 years old. He takes as many prescription drugs as a lot of senior citizens. One set of medications he has to take is one shot weekly, followed by 7 pills a day, and has to do this for a solid year to hopefully cure his hepatitis C. If they can't cure it, his future is very grim. Danny is just on OHP and has several other outstanding medical problems also, but Social Security keeps denying him from disability. If for any reason the Oregon health plan falters, Danny's health will be seriously compromised. He is disabled and cannot work, so he lives with us. Because he has nowhere else, no one else willing to help him or anywhere else to go, he has zero income. Compared to Danny, my story is short. I buy thyroid medication out of pocket because I have no insurance at all. I should have asthma and allergy meds also, but I can't afford to even see a doctor to get the medicine I can't afford. My take-home pay is under $600 a month. Danny and I are both too young to benefit from your new bulk buy program. I'm hoping that bulk purchasing can someday be for everyone who needs it. Lowering the age, income, and eligibility of your new bill, Senate Bill 329, will help out a lot more Oregonians to stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. My name is Joe Mahoney, and I am an insulin-dependent diabetic. Besides that, I have neuropathy in my feet, so if you see me grimace a little bit, it's because they're active right now. I'm here in pain, okay? That's how seriously I consider this. I walk with great difficulty. To get the... First of all, I want to show you something. Maybe you haven't seen, I don't know if anybody's seen this. Very few seniors have, it seems. This is the federal discount card. I went through with Medicare, because I'm a determined New Yorker by birth. I stayed on the phone for almost half a day to get that card, to get my name there. That's how hard it was. I literally held on for over an hour on the phone, just to speak to somebody to start this card. All right? I don't know how many 80-year-old grandmothers or 85-year-old grandmothers would have stayed on the phone at that time, and that's probably why, one of the reasons why it wasn't actively, actively supported by the populace. But that was my personal experience. But that wasn't the end of it all. I went out, and I take, this is my life, right there, insulin. And I thank the drug companies for doing that, you know, for the research back in the early 1920s and the improvement that has been coming. It's been a lifesaver for me. But when I went out to try to get pricing on what, to get the best price I could, it's all right to talk about discounts. But discounts off of what? My first 15 years of my life I spent in New York on Wall Street. I understand finance a little bit. It's all right for one side of the ledger, but what are you discounting? The prices were all over the lot. From $33 to $34 from one hospital pharmacy, down to $23 for the exact same thing. Exactly the same drug. I finally wound up with Medico, which probably all people know of it. It's a very large drug supplier with the best price. But that took me many, many days to get there. Literally walking around, talking with pharmacists who were confused, who didn't know, in some cases, what the prices were, what I was talking about with this card. Until I went back a couple of times and took one or two places, and I finally got the price. They were very nice and very courteous. They provided a good service. So when I look at this prescription drug purchasing pool, I, as an old Wall Streeter, look at it and say, well, that's common sense. That's what Walmart does, drive down price by bulk purchasing. You don't have each Walmart store purchasing their own products. You group purchase. You say, we got X amount of people here, come let's negotiate. That's good American business practice. negotiating lower prices is the key to this program. Then we'll know what the gross. I don't have to go around to each pharmacy and try to find out what price it's going to be today. And this is, by the way, the discount program, which was talked about just in here in this room. I looked at the companies. I get mine from Novo Nordisk because they happen to be the cheapest one. There's only two. There's only one other supplier of this, as I understand it. And they're not listed there. Now, maybe I have something against Swedish companies. I don't know. But be that as it may. However, they happen to have the best price right at the moment. As a participant in this program, I believe we should expand the prescription drug purchasing program so that all Oregonians without prescription drugs could participate. I think that's only fair. It's a fairness issue here we're talking about. It's providing health care for all of us. We're all in the community. It's not just giving me an advantage because I happen to be a little more aggressive than maybe the average person to try to ferret out what the best price is. That's not fair. It'll help us already qualify because when more people can join, as I said, the purchasing pool, we can negotiate larger discounts with pharmaceutical companies. Even with the Medicare prescription plan that begins in 2006, which I hope I'll be automatically enrolled in. By the way, they did do a right thing. I was automatically enrolled for the second time. I didn't have to go through the process twice. Seniors like me will pay an average of $792 in out-of-pocket costs in addition to the monthly premiums. Now, if you're talking about low-income people, that's the bottom 20-30% of our population in this state. Well, that's a significant cost. Participating in the purchasing pool will lower out-of-pocket costs, making it easier to afford life-saving medications. I do encourage you to pass SB 329. Expanding the purchasing pool will reduce our costs for Oregonians who do not have prescription coverage and help the state save more on prescriptions. We've heard from our business community. It just makes sense all the way around. This approach is not radical. It just makes sense. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Philip Kennedy Wong and Mary Beth Healy, would you come up?
Good afternoon, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Philip Kennedy Wong with EMO, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. We are the State Association of Churches. I'm here to speak in support of the bulk prescription purchasing pool. It's a mouthful. But I want to take a little slightly different tack than what has been stated earlier. And although we share many of the sentiments expressed by other advocates, what I do want to talk about is the connection of health care costs to poverty, which is something that EMO is very concerned about, as well as other religious traditions. And the bottom line is that we do know that the cost of health care is rising, and that does have a correlation to poverty. Let me state a few statistics. As many of you may be aware of, recently there was a report that stated there was over 600,000 Oregonians without health insurance. I believe Dr. Goldberg had already mentioned that earlier. Well, here is another number that we have been tracking, and that is the number of Oregonians who are eligible for food stamps. And right now we have over 800,000 Oregonians that are eligible for food stamps. And I suspect that there is a lot of overlap between the two groups. With that said, I want to applaud the pharmaceutical companies for creating and having pharmacy prescription assistance programs, because it plays a role in addressing the problem of high health insurance costs and health insurance in general. With that said, one of the approaches that we take to addressing poverty in society is, just to borrow a basketball term, like a full court press, meaning that we all have a personal responsibility, meaning that we support and applaud and encourage socially responsible businesses, like some of the drug companies here that testified earlier in terms of programs that they're doing voluntarily. But we also believe that there is a role for government to play as well, because we know, as one of the folks on the front lines of addressing poverty, that churches and charities cannot address poverty alone. It has to involve every single one of us, whether it's through institutions like business or through government or on our own as volunteers. In order to effectively to address poverty, we have to have every single available resources as possible. And what the bulk prescription pool represents is a role for government to play to help reduce the cost of prescription drugs. So with that said, I'm going to end my remarks by stating that we would be in favor of removing the income restriction and also removing the age requirement for this particular legislation. And thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Philip.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Beth Healy. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Health Security, and thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill today. I'd like to start off. One of the women who we work with today, or who we work with, was not able to come today, but I did pass out her written testimony. She's also the Daily Dose. You may recognize the stories that come in your box every day of an Oregonian struggling with whether it's high cost of prescription drugs or being uninsured or just the high cost of health care in general. But I'd like to just highlight a couple of points of Catherine's or Kathy's testimony because I think it's very poignant. So last summer, her husband lost his job of 30 years. Of course, naturally, with that, they lost their health insurance as well and couldn't afford to pay the $748 a month in COBRA benefits. Her husband and she are both diabetic and take numerous prescriptions. The 10 prescriptions that she needs total more than $1,200 a month before her insurance ended and her husband's were $400. And she did something pretty unique. You know, she went to a medical study to try to get lower prescription costs by being in a study for a month or two. She wasn't sure if she was taking a placebo or the real thing, but it just shows the extent that Oregonians will go to try to get the medication that they need. And so we did a little math with the prescription drug program, and it's interesting, in this family, Kathy would not qualify because she's 51, but her husband, Mike, does qualify because he's 54. And he's going to be able to save $70 a month on his prescriptions, which is, you know, a couple of tanks of gas in this economy. And if Kathy could join, she would save $200 a month. So we're talking $300 for that family, and that is significant money. And I just think that it gives us a good opportunity to think about expanding this program. So I just wanted to highlight that for you. I also just want to go to a couple of other issues and reiterate a few things that have been made because I do think that some things are worth repeating. So prescription drug prices have been increasing at double-digit rate increases, and there's no end in sight to that projection. I think it's important that we look as a state on how we can work together to reduce those costs and really save both the state taxpayers and clearly Oregonians' money. There are 780,000 Oregonians without prescription drug coverage. That's, you know, a lot of us. And last session, as you all know, we worked to pass Senate Bill 875. We're really happy this week. And I want to say that there was an article in the Eugene Register Guard yesterday, and we got 154 calls in our office just yesterday, starting at 6:30 in the morning. I wasn't there then, but shortly thereafter, starting at 6:30 in the morning, and you know, we just help them fill out the application. We'll send it back to them. They sign it and send it off, and they can save on their medications. And I express this to you because people were so happy, right, and really pleased that the state legislature had passed this program. So all of you can be commended for it, since it did pass unanimously. And you may not have been in the same chamber, Senator Cruz, but it did pass unanimously in 2003, and Senator Montes Anderson, and it gives us a great opportunity. And so the individuals who we did talk to were really surprised how easy the program was. Many of them had gone through prescription assistance programs, which prior to the reorganization had not been very easy for people to fill out those applications. So it's very, very easy for people. They sign the application affirming that they meet the criteria, then send it back, and about 2 weeks later they'll get the card. So expanding the prescription drug purchasing pool so that all Oregonians without drug coverage can participate, private sector employers, Taft-Hartley funds, and other private health insurance purchasers gives us the negotiating power that we need to drive down costs, even prices, even more. And the state would benefit, of course, as well by the increased savings as state agencies and local governments start to join in, and that's just being fiduciarily sound with taxpayer money. And I just, again, I have to say that the interest, just as Mr. Bennett from AARP said, and Dr. Goldberg, I mean, as people learn about this program, and we don't have money to do advertising, right? As people hear about this program, they are going to want to join, and many of the individuals interested did not meet that narrow eligibility criteria. And so I think that there's an opportunity, and there was a family that called yesterday, and they were from Junction City, and they spend $4,000 a year on their prescription drugs. They own a small farm, and their gross income was just above the 185% of federal poverty. So if we did either net income or eliminated the income eligibility, that family would be able to save as well, because they can't participate today. And so, as written, Senate Bill 329 would not help this couple, but if we eliminated the income eligibility, it clearly would, and I hope that you would consider amending the bill to increase the income limit as well. And so, from Joe from Beaverton and Catherine Eisen from Roseburg to Bob and Carol Biddle in Pendleton, Oregonians are looking to you to help them afford their life-saving prescription drugs. And the prescription drug purchasing program is the kind of help that they are asking for. It's simple, it's easy, and it gets them the medications that they need. And I just have to say, you know, answering the phone yesterday at my office was just incredibly rewarding, and it was worth a lot of those dark days in the work group of 2003. And it was great to hear people being so excited. So we do support Senate Bill 329. We would like to see the income eligibility lifted. And it's a win-win. It saves taxpayers, it helps Oregonians, and I encourage you to pass the bill today and move the process forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, before we call Jim Gardner back up, we are going to hear one bill today. Senate Bill 553, which was one of the three hearing aid bills that we had last time. There is an amendment to it. We hope to be able to move that. We'll have a work session on that bill. We do not plan to move Senate Bill 329. There is a collaborative effort going on. We are working with Mr. Gardner. He did submit some testimony, and we're trying to be sensitive to any concerns that people have about the bill. We have another bill, 623, which refers back to 875, the bill from last session. We do have an amendment coming on that. We will consider both of those bills perhaps on Tuesday or Thursday at the latest. And again, we want to take our time in doing this and be open to suggestions and so on. There are two bills that are listed as possible, public hearing, possible work sessions. That's 418 and 419. Both of these have to do with the hearing aid issue that we heard the last time. We still, in my personal polling of the committee, and the committee doesn't know what the result of that polling is, but we're on the cusp of either approving or not approving these, and I want to talk to each individual one more time. This does not violate the open meeting law. I'm talking to one individual at a time to see what the consensus of the committee turns out to be. And again, we will come back and have a public work session, perhaps on those, both of those, or one of those bills. So with that, I would like to invite Mr. Gardner to come back. And we started with you, Jim, and we're going to end with him. And by the way, I consider Jim to be a friend. We've worked together on issues. We have a good working relationship. We respect each other. I respect him very much, and we're trying to be fair. We know that this is not something that can be done by one house or one side of the aisle. It takes a collaborative approach, and we're working on that. However, our time to hear the bills, act on the bills, on Senate bills, is April 8th. We're trying to get things done in an expeditious manner without... Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate your gracious comments, Mr. Chair, and obviously feel likewise with respect to your leadership on this and many other issues of importance to the state. I'm not going to read through all of my testimony, but kind of highlight it and then leave the written testimony with you. And I must, on behalf of PhRMA, reluctantly oppose the fundamental change to the Oregon prescription drug program that would result from the enactment of this bill. While PhRMA cannot support this particular legislation in its current form, we are committed to working to ensure the success of this program, the prescription drug program, and to assisting the state of Oregon in meeting the prescription drug needs of low-income Oregonians and senior citizens and others lacking prescription drug coverage. During the 2003 session, PhRMA worked shoulder to shoulder with a wide-ranging coalition of advocates and legislators, many of whom you've heard today, including the current sponsors of Senate Bill 329, to develop broad support for a prescription drug bulk purchasing program aimed at benefiting state agencies, local government, PEB, and low-income seniors lacking prescription drug coverage. The 2003 legislation was carefully written to achieve this important objective while avoiding interference with the private health insurance market. And in a nutshell, we think that's the line that this bill crosses, in particular the movement into the private sector, whether it be Intel or Nike or PGE or whatever employer, and all would be eligible under this bill. Many believe that the Oregon prescription drug program is at a critical stage. To date, it has not succeeded in attracting participation from the large governmental purchasers, school districts, PEB, and cities that the program was intended to benefit and to have as really the critical mass for that purchasing pool. I believe that if the program is to succeed, two key thresholds must be crossed initially. First, the program must succeed in attracting participation from its originally intended beneficiaries, especially PEB. Now, PEB has indicated through its new leadership in the person of Gene Thorne that in future premium years it is willing to look at some self-insurance options with a pharmaceutical benefit carve-out, which would make it possible for them to realistically evaluate participation in this program. And I think that's a very critical step that in terms of the core objective of lowering the cost to state agencies, that's a critical step that should be very seriously considered by people at PEB and the PEB community defined largely. Second, As we know from the Senate Bill 623 debate, the administrative rules provision needs to be changed so that the administrative rule process can proceed smoothly, and that will be the subject of Senate Bill 623, a bill which we do support with the amendment that Senator Cruz, I think, is going to present, which will not in any way interfere with the operation of the administrative rule process. I believe, and Pharma believes, that enactment of the fundamental change to the 329, the 875 program that 329 would effect would distract the program from those core objectives and generate significant political controversy that really would interfere with the success that we're mutually committed to achieving. We continue, with that said, to be committed to working with the legislature, with the administration, to improve access to life-saving pharmaceuticals for all Oregonians, especially low-income citizens and senior citizens. And to that end, we're committed to a three-part strategic initiative. First, strenuous efforts in full cooperation with the state to improve patient access to the free and discounted drug programs offered by pharma member companies that we talked about earlier. The free programs currently serving approximately 100,000 Oregonians with a rate of growth that's just been through the roof. And that's, again, roughly four times the number of Oregonians that will be served at the end of this fiscal year by OHP standard. Continued support for the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, with a special emphasis on persuading large governmental purchasers like PEB to step up to the plate and really give this a try. And third, a close working partnership with the state of Oregon to ensure a smooth transition to the federal government under MMA, the Medicaid Modernization Act, of responsibility for providing pharmaceutical benefits to the dual eligibles, Medicaid, Medicare duals, and a thorough and effective outreach to the non-dual eligibles, who we haven't really begun even to talk about, but who must sign up in a timely fashion or suffer permanent disadvantages in terms of the premiums that they will pay. With regard to the first objective, you will be seeing a bill in either your committee, Mr. Chair, or in Senator Mona Sanderson's committee that we've been working on with Senator Bates, Senate Bill 598, which would involve the state in a much more aggressive way in getting people in touch with the free prescription drug programs, getting a networked effort underway so that we can take full advantage of that very successful program. We would be more than happy to participate collaboratively in any work group that you may see fit to establish, Mr. Chair, and once more put our shoulder to the wheel to try to develop a program that we can all support and all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you. You referred to the dual eligible and, by implication, the infamous clawback, which you so eloquently said might be unconstitutional.
I would commend to your attention, Mr. Chair, for those interested in the legal arcana that I love to delve into, the article that I did for the CSG magazine. It's actually reprinted in today's Capital Clips. So
it was a great article, and I congratulate you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no others on the list to testify, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 329, and I will open a... I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 553. I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 553. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 553. Yes, so if you would explain, please.
Thank you, Chair. This sir was heard at the last meeting. The original bill reduces the number of advisory council on hearing aid members who are experienced in fitting hearing aids from 4 to 3, and then increases to 2 the number of council members who are consumers of hearing aids and do not possess professional qualifications of other members. Mm-hmm. Requires governor to appoint second consumer member to fill vacancy of current council member whose term expires after expiration of date. There are the -1 amendments that you should have in front of you. Basically, what this does is restore that only one member of the advisory council is a consumer of hearing aids, and modifies that then one member of the advisory council is a person whose occupation provides services to consumers of hearing aids but receives no compensation related to sales of the hearing aids. Thank you, Chair.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to Bill 553.
Okay. Senator Metzger moves the -1 amendments to 553. Discussion? Any disagreement? The amendments are moved.
Senator Morissette, I move Senate Bill 553 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Gomesker moves 553 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Would you please... Oh, discussion. No discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Chair,
please.
No. Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Montanus?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye.
Okay, Senate Bill 553 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Morris will carry the bill. Okay, seeing no other business before the committee, we will close the work session and close the committee hearing. All right.